Welcome to the Hashtag MoLedge Podcast broadcast from the state capitol in Jefferson City, sponsored by the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce, Missouri Farm Bureau, and the Sheet Metal Workers Local 36. Now from the state capitol, the Hashtag MoLedge Podcast.
Welcome to the MoLedge Podcast. This week, live from Senator Munslinger's office in the beautiful state capitol. I want to thank our friends at KMOX, our new friends in Kansas City, KCMO. I want to thank the Missouri Farm Bureau and the St. Louis Chamber of Commerce for sponsoring the podcast. This week we have Representative Jeremy Lefavre. Welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Scott. It's good to be here.
And our host, Senator Munslinger. Thanks for having us.
Well, you're quite welcome. Glad to have you.
Lobbyist extraordinaire Jackie Barjay.
That was a little much, but thank you.
And then number one seed in the Barclays Cup, Dick Webster Region, Brian Grace.
I'm very happy to be here as a number one seed today on the first day of March Madness. Thanks, Scott.
Hours away from starting. Senator, you seem to have spent a lot of time in session this week, but not a lot happened. Tell us kind of the slowdown, and does that end anytime soon?
I certainly hope so. I mean, you know, following last week's 39-hour filibuster and the PQ that we did. I see things getting better even this week. We got to a bill yesterday. It was actually Senator Joe Kevney, the minority leader's bill. So we're moving forward. We didn't have to read the journal yesterday.
Jeremy, don't you think, though, that it was a very good parliamentary tactic to go to Senator Kevney's, one of his bills that was on the calendar? But it was also probably the Democrats had to also show they were committed and filibuster it, too.
Yeah, I think it was the first start at what seemed to me like the majority sort of extending that first olive twig. Yeah. And I think it showed some maturity on behalf of the Democrats to be able to at least demonstrate a willingness to look at the twig by not reading the journal. And so I think we're taking small parliamentary steps that are demonstrating some respect on both sides for understanding an appreciation for what happened last week, but also an understanding that we have a responsibility and a need to govern moving forward. How we get there, I'm not sure, but I thought yesterday was a positive step.
Brian, you served in state government the last time mm-hmm. the Senate completely broke down. It looks like it's not quite there here.
No, I think yesterday was, you know, as Representative Lefavre said, a good start to a thawing in the relationship between the Republican and the Democrat caucus. I've been doing this for about 15 years now, and this is, I think, the most tense I've seen in the first half of session on either side of the building, and probably the best timed spring break that I've seen in those 15 yep. years. Allowing everybody to go home next week, spend some more time with their family in their day jobs, and then come back and give this session kind of a fresh restart is exactly what everybody needs right now.
Jackie, I think what we may see, though, during spring break is the senators getting some time to clear their heads, but it looks like the business communities in St. Louis and Kansas City are gonna launch an effort to show that they are opposed to this.
I think you're right. I think there's a lot of big businesses that realize that there the repercussions that could happen yeah. from this and what has happened in other states, that people are getting a little nervous, a little antsy about what could happen in Missouri.
Well, in fact, I think tomorrow morning you're going to see a rally or a press conference in St. Louis with Governor Nixon and a lot of representatives of the St. Louis business community to speak against SJR 39, which didn't happen before the Senate debate.
Jeremy, it seems a compelling argument, something that hasn't happened in the state yet. I think this has shown that this issue can make conventions and tourism, it can have a negative impact. This must be an odd time where the Chamber of Commerce and Governor Nixon are lockstep, right?
Well, I think certainly you've seen them lockstep on a number of issues, namely the governor and the chamber's top priority of Medicaid expansion. So this is
a shout out to my aunt who came in and gave us a Medicaid expansion before we started.
Absolutely. She teed it up, so I'm not going to not take that one. But I think the governor and business have teamed up on a whole host of things that I think are important for the state. And so I am glad to see the governor working with the business community. It would also, I think, help in both the House and the Senate if the governor engaged with the legislature a little more, too.
Quick prediction. Does the House change the bill to affect just the clergy and send it back over?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Senator, do you think this SJR goes to the ballot like it came out of the Senate?
I hope to think that we didn't spend 39 hours on a bill and have it really messed up. You know, I believe the people of Missouri would vote for it the way that it passed out of the Senate, and I think that's what they want to vote on.
Jackie, I think, from what I understand, there was a meeting last night of some attorneys, of which the speaker is one of them, and Kevin Austin, the deputy floor leader, is one of them, looking at the legal ramifications. Do you think the House makes change? Does it ultimately go to the ballot like it came out of the Senate, or are there changes?
I agree with Jeremy, Representative Flavor, on this one. I do believe that there's a lot of discussion going on right now on how they want to put it to the people and what the response would be and what the repercussion for the business community would be. So I think there will be a lot of talk about making changes and seeing how they don't want to disrespect the Senate. They don't want to disrespect the process of a 39-hour filibuster and the PQ and the stalling right now. But I do think there will be a lot of discussion about change.
Brian, could this go to the ballot like it came out of the Senate?
I think Senate leadership intends for this to go to the ballot like it came out of the Senate. If the House did it as simple as changing a comma in this bill, you're going to have to invoke another PQ in the Senate. So I know there are a lot of forces asking the House to make both significant and minor amendments to the bill, but the fact is that any change that requires this to have Senate approval again is going to create another shutdown in the Senate.
Senator, do you think that they do another PQ? It goes that far again?
I think time will tell, but, you know, the one thing that I heard, and we've heard a lot of, well, even some disparaging comments on the floor since the filibuster ended over here in the Senate, that's upset a lot of my members.
Sure.
And even comments that, you know, we never even got to put an amendment on. Well, I want to remind you, the Democrats held the floor with that bill like 23 and a half hours with their amendment pending and never let it get to a vote. So there's some hard feelings both ways, but we're talking now. I've had good conversations with Senator Kevney and others in their caucus, and so I don't know. But when it gets back, I really hope it doesn't come back. I'll go along with that thought process, because
it's good to have the podcast host in your office, and we appreciate it, because as people, you have relationships with Democrats.
I do.
Do you believe things get somewhat back to normal after Easter?
I certainly hope so. I mean, they've got things we need, or they want done. We've got things we need to do. Of course, we need to do the budget. And we should all be big boys here, big girls. And I'm not going to say we're going to sing Kumbaya, but, you know, I think we can get past this. You know, you've got the filibuster, and then the counter to that is the PQ. And after 39 hours, I don't know what anybody else was thinking would happen. I mean,
privately, I've heard Democratic senators tell me that they feel like there's some things they could have done differently to avoid this as well. I mean, Senator Rogers taken a lot of criticism for being the one that handled the bill that ended in the filibuster, but there's some Democratic senators and after the weekend have said, you know, we could have handled this a little differently.
And we would have liked nothing better than not to have to do that.
Yeah.
You know, this end of the building is the end that's supposed to negotiate and do things. I think probably one thing with the bill, there was very little in it to negotiate with along the lines of thoughts. And it wasn't that there wasn't negotiations going on. There was hours of negotiations going on in the back room that just broke down.
Brian, does things move on after the break?
Absolutely. We've got 6 weeks of the legislative session left when we return. The most important thing is approving the annual fiscal year's budget, which Missouri never fails to do, in contrast to our neighbors in Illinois. But there's a whole host of other
shot
bills
across the river,
absolutely, and priorities that have to get done every year. And you know, last year after the PQ was used in the second to last week of session, I didn't believe that the Senate could be shut down for an entire week. I was proven wrong. I don't believe I'll be proven wrong in my belief that you can't shut it down for 6 weeks.
Jackie, as things get back to normal here in the Capitol after break.
I'm not sure, honestly. I obviously have the least amount of institutional knowledge at this table in this room, but the process, if you look back how many times the PQ has been used, how many times in the past few years versus 15 years. My father's been doing this way before I was born. The process of a filibuster and the PQ on the other side, it's all about negotiating and figuring out a deal and coming to something, and maybe the process is changing a little bit.
Well, you may have the least amount of personal, but through family lineage, I think you may have the most of anybody in the entire Capitol. So, cumulatively, I think you're right.
You know, really, things aren't what they used to be 20, 25 years ago. I mean, term limits is really a big cause of what's happened over here, I believe.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. Jeremy LeFevre, this week in the House, what is called by some a historic override. Can you break it down for us?
Historic. First of all, the idea, the number of times people said the word historic yesterday, that we overrode something that the governor did in a Republican supermajority. I mean, the fact that, okay, we do that all the time. But, yeah, we used the power that the Constitution allows the legislature to say, if we think that revenue is above or is enough to fulfill the obligations of the budget, then the money spent on that budget should be spent in such a manner. And I voted for both of those overrides. I think the amount of money was a little less than $1 million. Growth is 4.6% when the budget that we had was 2.8. I think the facts are there. I think the cause is good. And so I was comfortable with making that call on that amount of money.
You know, Representative LeFevre may quibble with the word historic, but I think he would have to admit that Donald Trump was right. The Republicans are winning, they're winning, they're winning. You're getting tired of them winning. They're winning so much.
Like America, you're getting tired of winning. You also won on Ladder Safety Awareness Day, right?
Big week.
Yeah, your own piece of legislation.
It was, you know, as much fun as we had on the floor, it was brought to me by a constituent whose mother had fallen off of a ladder for the second time and really had hurt herself badly and was not taking it seriously, that my friend would, mom, call me, I will come over and paint or do whatever you want. And so we were talking about it, and I said, if I did a resolution and made her birthday Ladder Safety Awareness Day in the state of Missouri, would she take you seriously? And he said she probably would, so we did.
And it was fitting, though, that you had a Speaker of the House who fell off a ladder this winter, putting Christmas lights on his home, probably at the request of his wife, as we all do, and tore a ligament in his shoulder. Uh-huh. And you delivered a resolution partly.
He was my lead co-sponsor, yeah, as well as Tracy McCreary, whose husband is
exactly
holed up right now, probably listening in live because he fell off of a ladder. And
Jeremy, can we say this was a historic
It was the most historic ladder safety awareness resolution the House
This was the most historic day in Representative LeFevre's tenure, because this was the first time Representative LeFevre ever passed a bill all the way through the legislative process.
That's right.
Or a resolution.
With my name on it. So, yeah, this is a...
Jackie, you have a piece of... Speaking of very historic piece of legislation, you have a piece of legislation you noticed this week that Tracy McCreary filed.
I did. I think it's one of the most important ones and one of the most influential ones. It was to urge the legislative body to use the word fiscal instead of physical while referring to the fiscal process.
You know, Senator Munsinger, while we're here in your office, I think we may be outnumbered on this 3-2, but I believe maybe someone should introduce a resolution saying how we pronounce Missouri, because a lot of our listeners on from KMOX will say Missouri. They don't understand there's a big, big state out there where we pronounce it correctly.
You know, sometimes I'll pronounce it either way.
John Ashcroft, right?
Brian, as any good this, politician would.
He's seen the senator ready to launch a statewide
yes. Bid. When he's at the Arch, it'll be Missouri.
When he's at the Sale Barn,
it'll be Missouri. Missouri. When he's in West Butler County, it'll be Missouri.
At the feed store, yeah.
That's right.
This was while the legislative action was a little slower, the political stuff was hot. Donald Trump wins the Missouri primary by a razor-thin margin. Hillary Clinton barely edges out a socialist and calls it a win. Jeremy LeFevre, Kansas City was pretty strong for Sanders. Was that surprising to anybody?
I think the biggest thing that this showed us, or should have showed, particularly politicians, is a great big reminder of who's in charge. You know, the vast majority of Missouri Democratic leadership, myself included, all in for Hillary. Speaker Todd Richardson, Caleb Jones, Elijah Haar, the up-and-comers, the leadership largely of the Missouri Republican Party, Rubio. our candidate squeaked out a win. Their candidate nabbed 6% of the vote. If there's any question about it, the voters are in charge of this process.
That's a fair point. Senator, did you have a favorite in the primary?
Well, it was Rubio till the last couple of weeks. I mean, I still thought that, you know, but...
The Missouri Times endorsed Ted Cruz.
And Cruz was the one that looked like maybe he
Jackie,
had a chance.
I was at the rally in St. Louis that Trump did, and I watched the news reports of the one in Kansas City. Talking to the Cruz campaign, they felt like they had a 1 or 2 point advantage how it would break down. The protests, they felt like, not so much cut into their voters, but it took voters away from other candidates and brought them to Trump. And they felt like the protesters, I mean, it was a razor-thin margin Trump won by. They felt like the protesting was easily the margin of difference for their campaign.
Recounts are probably going to happen on both sides.
Now, Brian, I believe, though, that on the Republican side, there's a big win bonus where the Democrats are more proportional, right?
Yeah, well, so the Republicans are proportional unless you're over 50%. Obviously, nobody was there, but there is a win bonus. Yes. So first, the votes have to be certified, and that will take several weeks. And with a 1,700-vote margin, it could shift that much. You could then go for a recount. And in this process, this fight to 1,230-whatever delegates, a recount, I would say, is certainly within reason for those votes. When you talk about the difference in both of these races, especially for the Republicans, right? If you look at the candidates that had already suspended their races before they entered Tuesday, with a 1,700 vote margin, you had a guy like Ben Carson who had 8,200 votes, who had endorsed Donald Trump, right? But still had enough momentum to grab that many votes.
Some of that early voting, you think?
I don't believe so. I think that people walked into the booth and voted for the guy, even if he wasn't running, the guy or gal, even if they weren't running at the time, who they still wanted to be president. And that's why you saw a lot of those people, because, look, Donald Trump has a tremendous amount of detractors. Ted Cruz was never the prohibitive favorite among the Republican electorate. So you see a lot of moderate Republicans who went to that voting booth frustrated with their options. So they made a vote of conscience, I guess, to show that they still wanted Marco Rubio or Ben Carson or even Jeb Bush, who had several thousand votes.
Jackie, Tuesday night in the Democratic fight, is Hillary Clinton going to be the nominee?
I honestly don't know. Yes, I think so. But I have absolutely nothing to back that up with.
Senator,
to be
really
honest, I do not know. This whole thing has just been boggling to me.
In West Butler County, it's a little scary that half the Democrat Party in the states are voted for a socialist.
That is scary. That is scary. To me, I've been so busy this year, whether it's down here or even at home, I have not been able to watch a debate. Now, I was at home one night when the Democrat debate came on, and I think I watched about 5 or 8 minutes of it, and I said, whoa,
Donald Trump.
Is this what they're really talking about?
You know,
this is not the America that I know.
If Bernie Sanders is a socialist, which he's actually a Democratic socialist, and the difference is huge.
maybe on the next podcast he can explain
this. Yeah, the difference is huge in South Kansas City. It's not that huge in Odessa.
But it's fair at least then let's call a spade a spade. Donald Trump is clearly a neo-fascist. And if you've got somebody, I mean, with 40% of the vote,
Jeremy, darn good and well, I don't know what that means. You know when you said it.
I think one of those terms was French. Senator Munslinger, actually, and I don't know if you noticed this, first of all, you've got about 500 Democrats still in Lewis County, so it's cause for concern, which is your home county. But your county, on the Democrat ballot,
list them.
Actually had the only tie in the entire state, 239 for Hillary and 239 for Bernie Sanders.
That's frightening. Brian, let me ask you, can Donald Trump...
It's frightening
Trump,
that I know that.
Can Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton?
Look, 3 months ago, I would have told you Donald Trump couldn't beat Jeb Bush, and then I would have told you Donald Trump couldn't beat Marco Rubio.
He beat the Pope, for goodness sake.
Donald Trump continues to surprise everybody that knows anything about electoral politics. And so, as we sit today, I think most pundits believe that Hillary Clinton will run away with the general election. But Donald Trump is bringing voters to the polling booth that don't typically turn out to vote, especially in primary elections. And he has what appears to be some crossover appeal. I think his appeal goes more along demographic lines than it does party lines. So yeah. Can he beat Hillary? Yes. Will he? Who knows?
Jackie Bourget, can Donald Trump win a national election?
I am in the same boat. I did not think, I would not have bet that he would be here right now doing what he's doing. And I do.
Yeah.
I do think he could. And
I will say this, being, you know, a West Butler County hillbilly, I thought Trump would play to people. And yeah. I think he's raised a very important issue is trade. I think people said in these think tanks, and I won't pretend to understand international trade, it just looks to me like I have not seen the Mexican companies moving to America. And I think that's an interesting thing that's normally a Democratic issue, but Trump makes a pretty compelling case on it. Senator, you've went out and got votes. Can Donald Trump win Missouri?
Well, I believe he can.
I do too.
I really believe he can.
I don't know if he can win Ohio or Florida, but I think he can win Missouri. And I, Jeremy LeVever, can Donald Trump win a national election?
No, absolutely not. I think, unfortunately, I've long been a proponent of the national popular vote, and that's something that's going through. Donald Trump being on the ballot is not helping my cause. I think the way the system is set up, I think it disallows for a candidate like Donald Trump. I can't imagine the National Republican Committee with their sort of tend to be corporate backers genuinely going after Donald Trump, not for his fiscal policy, but he brings so much uncertainty. And if there's one thing that business cannot stand, it is uncertainty. And there's no way they can tolerate a market with Donald Trump overseeing the free world.
But Hillary has a trust issue, too.
She does. I would hate to use the word, or overuse the word, historic, but but this may be the first time in history where you have had two general election presidential candidates that have consistently had unfavorable numbers well above 50%. So trying to predict an electorate turnout when there's so much dislike for both candidates, I think you have a lot of voters on both sides of the aisle that may even turn out to vote and skip that question or write in their favorite podcast host as a presidential nominee.
That's Scott with two T's. coming out of Missouri, a couple big winners. Crystal Brinkley obviously looks very good. She ran the Clinton campaign. Jeff Rowe brought a candidate that I don't think most people thought would ever be as successful and has taken him. I mean, the Republican Party generally nominates the guy that comes in second. Ted Cruz is going to be the guy that comes in second. A lot of credit to Jeff. But, Jeremy, let me ask you this. Does it concern you that, I mean, I think Barack Obama was a wildly talented politician, maybe one of the most talented politicians America's ever seen. He took the nomination from Hillary Clinton in 2008. She's having a terrible time defeating a socialist in 2016.
Democratic
is she
socialist.
Just a bad politician?
No, I think this points more to, again, back to the point, I think voters are in charge of this way more than people like me want to give them credit for.
And they don't seem to like her.
I don't know that Barack Obama really stole the election for him, from her. I feel like people are tired of politicians, and whether they know why they are or not, they're tired of that, and they're ready to see somebody new. And so Barack Obama was the fresh new thing. And so people went to him as opposed to Hillary, and now they're looking for. It is funny to me that the 35-year, you know, year veteran who's, you know, 70-something years old and been in Congress for that long is the fresh new thing somehow in the Democratic Party. But he is to some people.
At some point, you know.
Well, but it's not just her. People don't like Cruz. People don't like Rubio. People don't like Nixon. People don't like politicians. They don't like the Senate. They don't like Congress. They don't like me. No offense. Well, they probably like the senator, but nobody else.
It is Ag Week.
Everybody likes Senator.
It is Ag Week.
Everybody does.
Last thing in Missouri politics that's sort of taken a back seat to the national scene as we've seen the national attention come to Missouri for the primary, but the governor's primary had a shakeup this week. Eric Greitens, not-for-profit organizer, has really done a great job in the Republican Party of fundraising. Phenomenal success. Now, most of it's from outside the state, but it still spends the same. $1 million of that came from one donor, and it wasn't Rex Singfield. It was a gentleman that's now in a lawsuit with some pretty salacious allegations. Catherine Hanaway's called for him to return that $1 million. John Kasich returned $250,000 he gave to him. Do you believe, Senator, that Grimes returns the money? And does that show a bigger problem when you take this money from outside and who knows where? It comes with some strings sometimes.
That's true. No, I think, you know, he should. Whether he does or not, I don't know how politically astute he is. But I would certainly think that his managers would urge him. However, I understood that there was a comment yesterday in the newspaper that no, we won't. Nope, I think was the actual quote. Nope, we won't return it.
Brian, it's hard for a politician to return $1 million.
It's difficult. You know, in quite often in elections, there are calls from opponents for their opponents to return donations for whatever reason. And those calls rarely go heeded. I think what gives this some extra credence or attention is that you saw a presidential candidate return $250,000 that was given from the same individual. And I think that elevates this discussion to something that that at least made me look twice at it.
Jackie, when you see a headline of largest supporter of a gubernatorial candidate and the word sex slave in the headline, there's nothing good there, right? That's tough.
No, I think that would make... And I don't know if he will or not, but I think he should return the money with that headline right there.
He makes the point, Jeremy, that he's innocent until proven guilty and whatever. I guess you could stay on that for a while, but, man, I mean, I think you may get more than $1 million worth of bad press now. But would it be fair to say that the commercials are still going to run regardless of whether he returns the money or not at this point?
Absolutely. I mean, whatever ad is going to run now, whatever it was, and I think... you know, the better Eric can define or tell people that this is a civil case as opposed to a criminal case, those sorts of things, I think it helps feed doubt. But he's also proven that there are people who are willing to invest $1 million, and quite frankly, this is nothing that another $1 million probably can't fix.
Really? Wow. Well, I mean, one thing is, Senator, Missouri voters don't know Eric Greitens and don't know a lot about him. He is introducing himself to the state. It is hard to run your first race for governor. This will be the first thing some people, or one of the first things some people see about him.
Well, that's true. I'd actually heard him speak a couple times before he ever ran. And we visited after he got done speaking, and he said he'd be interested in running in politics sometime. I said, great, we need a good state rep. 2 months later... he's running for governor. Yeah, I don't. That's
Senator,
quite a leap.
We could record a lot of podcasts, and we would not get a better line than that right there. So, why don't we end with a couple predictions, Jeremy LeFevre? Does this affect the race, and who wins the Republican primary? And does this affect Intuit for governor?
This does affect the race, but only to the effect that Eric Greitens loses by more than he was going to before, and Peter Kinder's going to win the nomination.
Senator, where do you see it?
I hope affects the race. I mean, but I still think Catherine Hanaway is going to be the next and first female governor of the state of Missouri.
Jackie Barge, where's the race at?
I agree. I think Peter Kinder is in the lead right now as well.
Brian Grace, you follow this. You've worked in this. You worked for the last Republican governor.
I did.
The only one since 1988.
I did. And
why more people don't look
bless
at Matt Blunt and
Governor Matt
it.
Blunt. I do follow this very closely, and I honestly see a path to victory for all four of the Republican candidates. And I'm not trying to be politically correct here, but there is a way that each one of them can navigate towards that nomination.
Eric Greitens can win this nomination, I believe.
Yes.
There is a path for
yes,
the win.
Yes, I absolutely believe Eric Greitens can, along with Peter Kinder, Catherine Hanaway, and John Bruner.
I want to thank everybody. Go to the Missouri Times website. Every year we do this fundraiser for the Epilepsy Foundation. It's called the Whispering Gallery Invitational, similar to the old Tiger Blood Tournament. You vote in a 64-team bracket, just like the NCAA, but it's your votes. Every time somebody campaigns and hashtags Barklage Cup, $1 goes to the Epilepsy Foundation, a wonderful charity that we're very proud to be able to help out every year with our fun and games and shenanigans. Go to MissouriTimes.com for your state political news. And watch This Week in Missouri Politics. I want to thank everyone at KMOX for helping with this. And if you're viewing from their website, we appreciate you downloading the podcast. Check it out on iTunes. Representative Jeremy LeVever, South Kansas City, Missouri. Thank you for being on.
Good to be with you. Thanks again, Scott.
Government official consultant extraordinaire, Brian Grace. Thanks for being on.
My first time as a one seed. Thank you.
Nice. He has one seed in the Dick Webster region of the Barclays Cup. Jackie Barget, thank you so much. One of our most sought after this week in Missouri politics, I guess. We're glad we joined us on the Hashtag MoleEdge podcast.
Definitely. Thank you for having me.
And obviously, she is hails from St. Louis, Missouri. And then very glad to have a fellow Missourian, Senator Munslinger from Northeast Missouri.
During Ag Week.
Yes, during Ag Week. Thank you for hosting. We appreciate it. And we will see you next week for our spring break edition. I don't know. Maybe we'll do this from the beach.
Yeah, that sounds great. You paying?
Well, we'll talk to Steve Moore. Okay. Okay. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week.